This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
She's looking to turn the party round into back what we used to have as a Tory party. We used to have authentic conservatism, and that is what she's trying to do. So we want freedom of speech, we want pro-enterprise, personal responsibility, living within our means. So they really were the only choice when I looked at it, for me, nationally, and also for locally.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast, your go-to source for insightful discussions on local and national political matters. Join us as we take a deep dive into local government across the county. Find out what the key decision makers have to say, what your money is being spent on, and how the party's policies could affect how we live. Plus, don't miss our regular feature, Westminster Watch, where we dissect the latest developments and decisions shaping the political landscape in the heart of the UK's capital. Engage with us as we delve into the issues that matter to you and explore the dynamic world of politics from a Kent perspective.
Hello and welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast. In a week, there were angry scenes in Faversham as rival groups came together over the migrant crisis. Raid hotel bosses and Medway moved to make clear they're not housing asylum seekers. There were two shocked defections by councillors in Kent, and one MP revealed plans to get his town back on track. I'm Simon Finley, local democracy reporter covering Kent County Council, and I'm joined by Dan Esten, who reports on borough and district councils.
Hello there.
And Robert Boddy, who covers Medway Council.
Hello.
And senior news editor Nikki White.
Hello.
Right, our special guest today is the borough councillor David Knight, who has defected from the Tunbridge Wells Alliance to the Conservatives. First up, Dan, what have you been looking at?
So actually, as you mentioned, I actually spent the weekend working to cover an anti-immigration demonstration and counter-protest, but unusually not in Dover this time, in Faversham of all places.
Mm. Not a place generally associated with that kind of protest. What was going on?
It was pretty eventful, surprisingly so. So basically a local man called Harry Hilden had been organising this anti-immigration demo for a little while now, with the plan being for protesters to march from the town's post office to Acacia Court, sort of in quite deep suburban Faversham, which is a former care home near a school, but for the past year it's been used to house unaccompanied asylum seeking children by the county council. I should say as well that in Faversham in recent week has had quite a high density of St George's flags put up in a perceived sort of anti-immigration, anti-government statement. I mean, it's been the source of some controversy in the town. So when I went to the meeting point on Saturday morning, anti-immigration demonstrators were pretty outnumbered by sort of left-wing counter-protesters, though crowds on each side were quite big, certainly hundreds involved. And at first there wasn't even any police presence at all, so it was quite rowdy, quite aggressive, lots of profanity, that kind of thing, though nothing, there were no arrests or the like on the day. But eventually they marched onto this asylum accommodation. It was interesting to watch the reaction of locals, ranging from extremely elderly people stood in their front garden clapping everyone as they went past to people just kind of watching on bemused.
Presumably they weren't able to reach the gates of the asylum housing itself, were they?
No, of course not. So the police had been there pretty early. There was a very large police line separating them from another pretty large presence of counter-protesters there. So the last couple of hours were people just sort of milling about on this green near this asylum accommodation, playing music and that sort of thing, although there was definitely some aggression towards the other side. Again, you know, there was sort of combination of some people who are local, some who'd obviously travelled in. There's a guy who's increasingly frequent at these things who is wont to wear the flag of the British National Socialist Movement. But almost as strange, there are also lots of children on both sides, I noticed, which is not something you often see at these kinds of protests. So all in all, it was a shockingly big and quite rowdy and one of the weirder atmospheres I've experienced at these sort of things.
Indeed. Robert, what's been happening in Medway?
Well, it might be more apt to say what's not going on in Medway, because this week the King Charles Hotel in Gillingham had to put out a statement saying the hotel was not hosting asylum seekers after social media rumours swirled and a march was planned to protest outside. Post said there is to be a march from near Rochester Airport down Chatham High Street to the hotel on September 20th, explicitly saying that the march would end there because the hotel was hosting migrants.
But they're not.
That's right. Hotel manager Stephen DiGiorgio said the rumour started a couple of weeks ago and people spread this false information without checking it at all. He also said the rumours were started by people trying to cause trouble, but we've had difficulty finding the source of these rumours, and people we've spoken to who shared it said they just copied and pasted it from somewhere else and they couldn't remember where. Gillingham and Raynham MP Nishaba Khan said the rumours were intentionally divisive and likely came from people outside of the Medway area. She also said it's harmful to the King Charles Hotel's business and unfair to their staff. The hotel is not the only one in Medway who have had to debunk rumours of hosting asylum seekers, as the Premier Inn at Liberty Quays in Gillingham also had to clarify that it was not hosting asylum seekers.
Simon, what's been going on at County Hall of late?
An otherwise normal week of business in the county has been interrupted by not one, but two defections this week, which came pretty much out of the blue.
Who's involved and who's gone where?
Well, they're both kind of unusual. Not strange, but unusual. The first person to emerge was Amelia Randall, who's a Reform UK County Councillor for Birchington and Rural down in Thanet, who's decided to join UKIP, which is slightly ironic since she wants to leave a party led by Nigel Farage to one that he no longer leads. But the UK Independence Party is a very different beast to what it was in Nigel Farage's day, sort of arguably more extreme, claiming to be in favour of sort of, you know, pretty hard-line right-wing policies, mass deportations of illegal immigrants, and saying that it's rooted in Christian beliefs.
What reasons did Amelia give for her defection?
Well, needless to say, we wanted to get both of these guys on, but Amelia didn't get back to us on that one. But she did send me a short statement and said, "I have left Reform UK and am indeed now representing UKIP. My constituents want a party that offers them change and solutions to their main issue, which are illegal immigration, the cost of living crisis and potential rise in Islam. UKIP are determined to carry out mass deportations and on embedding Christianity deep in the soul of our nation. This will make us a safer country that allows Christian values and culture, and we also have a leader that leads from the front and is, like us, a real everyday person."
So who else has gone?
Well, we'll be hearing from him in a minute. David Knight was a member of the Tunbridge Wells Alliance, which is an independent group of the Borough Council there, and he left the TWA to go to the Conservatives, which is probably the best piece of news that Kemi Badenoch has had in a while. Crumbs of comfort, probably. But as I said, David will be joining us in a little while. Nikki, what have you been up to and what have you been looking at?
I've been looking at an exclusive story Kent Online broke on Wednesday about how direct train services to London could return to one seaside town after almost four decades.
Where's that then?
It's Sheerness. There used to be a direct train, but since 1989, passengers heading to the capital have had to get off at Sittingbourne and wait for a connection. Now, it's really early days, but it's understood that South Eastern is looking at trialling a non-stop service to see if it's all viable, and if it is, it could become a permanent thing.
Well, this must be good news for commuters, yeah?
The route is already popular, with almost 58,000 people travelling between Sittingbourne and Sheerness stations in 2024 on average every month. And that's up from 2019, when it was more than 56,000. Now, obviously, since then, there's been COVID, and the rail industry generally has suffered the knock-on effect of more people working from home. But that's now changing. The actual number of passengers, more than 677,000 over the course of last year. And that's actually thought to be higher than the data South Eastern holds, if you take into account those who fail to pay for their tickets.
And the MP is on board with this?
Absolutely. Kevin McKenna has already written to South Eastern asking for them to bring the direct line back. He says Sheerness would benefit from a double whammy, with not only better access to higher paid jobs off the island, but also a boost in the other direction, as people will be able to get from London to Sheppey far more quickly and enjoy what the place to offer as a seaside resort. And he says that if islanders are taking on higher paid jobs too, they'll be spending that money back in their own community. Now, an estate agent has predicted that house prices could go up by 10% as a result of all this, with Sheerness seeing a similar boom to the likes of Whitstable and Ramsgate, which have seen far more Londoners move out as commuting to work becomes much easier.
Yeah, wouldn't that sort of price people off the island?
You might have thought that would be a concern, and that there will be some people that happens to, but Mr McKenna says that if Sheerness is going to develop, it really needs to reconnect with London and its economy and what that brings, which in turn can only boost things in the area. Now, Sheerness is now one of England's poorest towns, and in KCC's 2020 deprivation report, the town centre was ranked as the most deprived area in Kent. Money is being pumped into the island through various regeneration projects, but anything that can add to that can surely only help.
And what does South Eastern have to say about it?
Nothing at the moment. And the firm is staying pretty tight-lipped, as the idea is at such an early stage. But if they're fearing any kind of backlash, it doesn't seem there's going to be one. So let's just hope the numbers add up.
OK, thank you very much, Nikki.
Is there a topic that you would like to be discussed on the Kent Politics Podcast? Perhaps you've got a question for one of our panel, or you'd like to comment on a hot topic in local or national government. Get in touch by emailing or sending a voice note to kentpoliticspodcast@thekmgroup.co.uk.
Conservative Party leader Kemi Badenoch received some welcome news on the defection front this week. Rather than watching members go out the door, she watched someone coming in. He's Councillor David Knight from Tunbridge Wells Borough Council, and he's here to tell us why. Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast, David.
Simon, thanks very much, and thanks for having me.
Good to have you on. You've been a member of the Tunbridge Wells Alliance, which is a group of independents that's been quite significant in the past few years in changing the whole face of politics in Tunbridge Wells. But you decided to leave in the summer and go independent. Why was that?
Yes, it was a difficult call to make. I originally was independent, and then I joined the Alliance. But the way things are at the moment, I had a period of reflection over the summer holidays. I think there's two reasons, really. The first thing is because I believe the country is now in a very serious position. We've got serious challenges affecting us nationally and locally. And I don't really think the independent parties on their own can be as effective as they used to be. In so much as if we look back at last May, local elections now, people are voting at local elections on national issues. A lot of people don't realise that obviously there's only certain things that your local council or your local district council can do. Mm-hmm. But people really are voting along the national lines. So mm-hmm. I suppose that was the first thing. And I suppose the second reason really was obviously we've got the local government review coming along, whereby there's a combination of councils, obviously. And I think I need to be part of a bigger picture. So I think those are the two key reasons.
Mm-hmm. Okay. A number of weeks after you went independent, left the Alliance and went independent, you joined the Conservatives. Given the state of the Conservatives at the minute, why them, not the Lib Dems?
Well, I like a challenge. I always like a challenge. And I started my own business 35 years ago, left a well-paid middle management job, crazily, went to the bank, got a loan, and there you go. So I like a challenge. Mm. But seriously, yes, I know, it's sad, isn't it? The Conservatives lost Nadine Dorries and they got me. I'm not sure that's such a good swap, but there you go. But anyway, to answer your question directly, I think really they are the only party that will be able to make change. They are, financially, they have a plan. The main thing really is that Kimmy has had an uphill task tremendously, but she's very much looking to turn the party round now. She's looking to turn the party round into back what we used to have as a Tory party. We used to have authentic conservatism, and that is what she's trying to do. So we want freedom of speech. We want pro-enterprise, personal responsibility, living within our means. So they really were the only choice when I looked at it for me nationally and also for locally.
Just before we move on to tell the subject, I mean, I spoke to Matt Sankey of the Tunbridge Wells Alliance, and he said that during the election campaign of last year that you had... that is, the members of the Alliance, had made a verbal pact along with the other group members that they would hold a by-election if any one of you decided to move on, step aside or step on. You know, was that a true reflection of what actually happened?
Yeah, I have heard that rumour flying around. I'm not quite sure where that has come from, but certainly I never signed up for that. And in none of the meetings, I'm virtually 100% sure it's never been minuted or never agreed. But certainly, no, I never agreed to it. Matt, like myself, we're both very, very busy people running our own businesses. Mm. So, but no, as far as I'm concerned, I never signed up for that at all.
Mm, okay. Yeah. Just returning to what you were saying about the Conservatives, you think that they've probably got the best sort of, set of policies and for the economy, freedom of speech, personal responsibility and all that. But on a purely local level, with local government reform coming down the track, I mean, wouldn't it make more sense to join the Lib Dems? Because, I mean, they've got the vast majority of the members. They're probably the most likely to have the biggest voice in that little part of Kent when the new unitary authorities are made up. I mean, they'll certainly be a reasonably potent force in the West. So why did you decide to go for the not to go for the Lib Dems?
Really, I've never been a fan of the Lib Dems. And certainly, let's look at it locally, shall we? So they're putting up car parking charges at the moment, okay? We're trying to regenerate the economy and they're putting up parking charges, in some cases, over 100% locally. So that's not what I consider a way of helping local businesses by putting up car parking charges. People need to come into Tunbridge Wells, they need to park their car. So, you know, I couldn't never agree, you know, I would never sign up and do for that. I mean, it's affecting local business who are under a tremendous amount of pressure anyway. Mm. On top of that, in their 2024 manifesto, they promised the Lib Dems not to increase car parking charges. So how could I sign up with somebody like that? We will, the Conservatives, put local people and businesses first. The local economy has got many visitors who arrive by car. They've got to park. So they want these to be reasonably priced. Also, we've had some horrendous overdevelopment in our area, especially in our rural wards, whereby the local administration have sort of pushed things through. We've got a huge development over at Bassett's Farm in Horsmonden, a huge number of houses going into what is very small little village. Mm. So yeah, there's a number of policies that I could, never agree with them. So that's why I went for the Conservatives. And as I say, I do like a challenge.
Yeah. Okay. Right. I mean, what is it that, you know, people always think of Tunbridge Wells as being sort of a very affluent, well-to-do, full of retired half colonels, you know, writing letters to the Daily Telegraph I've worked there and I know that that's not the case. What do you think are the issues that people face there, residents face there, day to day?
No, that is a good question. Tunbridge Wells is very much seen like that. But we have some quite poor areas or disenfranchised people in Tunbridge Wells that do need looking after. So there are a number of things. I mean, parking is always a hot potato in Tunbridge Wells, and a development of a shopping centre. With the Amelia Centre is now open and is doing very well. It's being a big pull and a big magnet, increasing footfall into Tunbridge Wells. So, there's a number of sort of key issues that I think the Conservatives are well placed to develop and provide, answers for. Mm. Also, I suppose the other thing really is worth mentioning probably is that the council tax, the Tories will definitely aim to get the smallest amount of council tax increase for our residents that we can, whereas the Lib Dems really, I think a question's got to be asked about the number of trees they're planning on planting throughout the borough, which really, certainly in our rural wards, we certainly don't need them, and I certainly feel that the money could be spent on better things.
Mm. Okay. Tunbridge Wells has changed quite a lot in the last sort of, particularly sort of the last 10 years. I mean, 10 years ago, we had a absolutely rock solid, true blue Conservative council. Now it's been run by the Lib Dems. And that was partly to do with the growth of the independent movement. And eventually it kind of shifted over to the Lib Dems. I mean, what do you think has changed? Not the politics of it. What has changed to Tunbridge Wells?
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? To try and isolate one or two things, I think it would be quite sort of hard to pinpoint that.
Would you say it's the influx of people from London? People moving away, selling.
Yeah, that's a good point, Simon. I think that probably has an effect because we do have a lot of people moving out of London into the Tunbridge Wells borough area, certainly. And obviously, people moving out of London, they tend to have different politics, possibly. So that might be a factor. But I actually think it's representative of what's happened across the whole of the country. If you think about the whole of the country, there's far more choice of parties to vote for because I think people have been historically disenfranchised. And I believe people are very much disenfranchised now by the government. They certainly were over the Tory party over the last 14 years. And we've got some serious bridges to mend and things to build on. But certainly are with the current administration at the moment that are just causing, big problems for our country economically, very much so.
You live in Godhurst and you're a member of the local parish council. What are the issues facing rural communities these days? I live in a rural village, I can tell you housing development, bad roads, traffic are just a couple of them. I mean, faces Godhurst. I mean, last time I was in Godhurst, I remember there was a juggernaut coming in one direction and a juggernaut coming in the opposite direction. And I think that happens quite a lot.
In fact, I've just walked back through the village this afternoon and we had exactly that scenario playing its way out. Yeah, that is an issue. Parking is an issue. But people park okay. But I think it is really the routing of the HGVs coming through the village that causes a problem. And obviously roads and maintenance, I mean, potholes has been a big thing, although they're slowly being mended. So I think it's those things that, annoy the residents. So yeah, potholes and traffic, I think that will be two major things.
Yeah. Okay. We're talking about two things that you can't stop the traffic, but you can try and amend people's behaviours and you can fix the potholes, what can actually be done to fix these things in the longer term? Because, you know, clearly people are being told to put up with it, but it can't go on forever, particularly if the population continues to rise the way it is.
No. I think that is absolutely right. Well, obviously, these are issues for Kent County Council to address. And to be fair, that they have been. And we have now had a lot of potholes sort of filled in. But obviously, it's like a fourth bridge job, isn't it? A seventh bridge job. It's an ongoing thing. And it will remain to be seen what happens in the last few years of Kent County Council's existence before we move into local government review, whether Reform, who are now running the KCC, will be able to improve service for us. But certainly we're very active and proactive in the village in Gouda, certainly, and at the borough level we are as well. And of course we have we now got an excellent Tory councillor in KC, Claudine. So she is our Tory councillor, so we'll be putting as much pressure on her, obviously, to affect things that we need to get done.
Yeah. On a wider level, as someone who's been running his own business from 35 years or so, I mean, how do you see the state of the economy these days? Do you worry?
Oh, don't get me started. Yeah, I do worry. I do worry very much so. I just made a note, actually, before I was talking to you. Look at the debt the country has now. It's going up and up because obviously the bond yields, they're putting the rates up. And so our debt is absolutely huge now. Yeah, there are so many things where we've got basically a lot of it that stemmed from last autumn's budget, obviously. If you're trying to increase growth and support businesses, you don't put the job tax on people, do you? Because that is very much a disincentive for employers to employ people. I know that myself, and I see that with many of my friends having a complete clamp down on employment because of the jobs tax. So that's a huge thing, obviously.
Yes, it's not creating unemployment, but it's not creating growth through jobs either, because people are terrified from taking anybody on.
That's absolutely right. I mean, I think going back to the cost of borrowing, I think our UK borrowing costs now are the highest in Europe, because the markets, you know, are pricing the risk to lend into the UK. And look at our energy costs in the UK. I think they're the highest energy costs we have in Europe, all because the government made a political decision to tie the price of electricity to gas. That doesn't have to be the case, but that is the case. And so we have the UK, you know, certainly we have the, you know, the highest energy price. So, I mean, for any business, staffing costs going up, energy costs going up, what's the, you know, that obviously, you know, low growth, that's not going to produce growth, is it? So there's some of my big concerns, certainly.
Your leader, Kevin Bednock, this week offered the hand of friendship to the Prime Minister and, you know, offering a sort of like collaboration in helping to cut the welfare budget, sort of making the slight dig that basically you know how to spend but you don't know how to save. Why on earth would Sir Keir Starmer accept that offer?
Well, he's not going to, is he? I think it was a very generous move by Kimmy. I think it's a very good idea. If you just look at that sensibly, we should be working together on something like this. But, I mean, he's not going to do that. He won't do that on political grounds, will he, in a million years, I don't think. But I think it was a very generous offer by Kimmy to do that. I think it's very pragmatic and sensible. And that relates back to what I was saying earlier about authentic conservatism. We're just trying to get other people to see it the way that we see it. So I think that's a jolly good thing to do. It's a shame he probably won't accept it, though.
Hand on heart, David. will Kemi Badenoch lead the Conservatives into the next general election?
I very much hope she will. She's obviously taken her time, which I think is absolutely the right thing, to crystallise out the new policy, and the policies are being reviewed at the moment by the policy review group in central office, obviously. So she's taken her time to get that. I think she's very much going in the right direction, but the clock is most definitely ticking. And I think we as a party need to start getting our policies out there nice and clearly well in advance now. But I hope she will. I believe she's very much authentic herself, and I very much hope she will.
Councillor David Knight, thank you very much indeed for your time today.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot, Simon.
Reform UK, and especially its leader Nigel Farage, have been talking up the possibility of an election as early as 2027. But is this all just bluster and mischief-making? And why on earth would Labour, with a massive landslide majority, even think about calling it? Rob, can you think of any circumstances in which Labour would go early, or is this just a ruse to keep Reform supporters on their toes?
I think the short answer is no. I don't see any circumstances particularly... I mean, basically, Labour, with their massive majority, have control of when the next general election is, apart from, obviously, the mandated one of when the Parliament runs out. So, realistically, I cannot see any situation in which Labour themselves would decide, particularly with the polling numbers that we see at the moment, to call an early general election. I think what it is that... Reform do very well out of groups of people who have never voted before and not massively invested in politics. They're invested in Reform UK. And so they did big with people who'd never voted before. So you've got to keep those people engaged. I think the worst case scenario for Reform is that those people who woke up and decided to go out and vote, and they registered and went out and voted in the last election, basically lose interest before 2029. Yeah. So they've got to keep them interested, keep the news going, and the suggestion that there will be an imminent general election, you've got to stay focused, you've got to pay attention and all that. That's where I think this is coming from, rather than any realistic possibility. The only slight stumbling block that might come from that is, do those supporters then get a bit of fatigue of constantly being told, oh, be ready, and then it never comes, it doesn't come for years. Do they basically lose interest?
Yeah, and 4 years is a long time, but some commentators have been saying that it could be something to do with, in 2 years' time, Britain's economic position may be even more dire than it is now, and possibly even on the point of collapse, by which time, already sort of restive backbenchers may be getting even more so, and Jeremy Corbyn's new party may well be on the scene. So there could be a lot of pressures on Starmer not to stick around.
Well, yeah, obviously, but like every Prime Minister, especially one being taking control at a time like this, will face a perceived constant pressure to step down. It doesn't mean they actually will, and it doesn't mean the pressure is real in the way that the kind of pressure required to be exerted on a Prime Minister to force them to call an early general election when they have an absolutely titanic majority. That's the kind of crisis that were we in a country like France, it would be the kind of thing which involves like the creation, the end of the current republic, as the French will want to do. They've had about five of them by this point. The only possible things that I think could force a Prime Minister with this kind of majority to even consider calling a general election would be something which threatens the very integrity of and legitimacy of Parliament itself, something like getting involved in a foreign war, mm-hmm. or an economic, and like something like an IMF bailout package, orders of magnitude worse than under Jim Callaghan in the 1970s. It would have to be something of genuinely world's historical significance. And the idea that Reform and Jeremy Corbyn can combine to scare Starmer into basically giving up and unilaterally deciding, all right, I'll throw it all away, I think is basically ridiculous.
Mm. Okay. And Nikki, what do you reckon?
It'd be madness to be calling an election pretty soon now. I mean, nobody can blame anyone involved with Reform for getting excited about the possibility of it happening. A couple of years ago, if you'd asked most people involved in politics if they thought a party like Reform would be pushing the main players aside and showing themselves as real contenders, I reckon you'd have been hard pushed to find many who would agree that would happen. But it has. I mean, just here in Kent, you've seen at county council level how much of an impact Reform has had when it comes to attracting votes. I mean, why wouldn't they believe that they can replicate that nationally? Now you've got that wave of support growing, you'd be pretty daft not to run with it. We've seen what an influence they can have on setting the conversation politically. Never before have I talked about politics in such detail with friends and family as I have in recent months. And that's no bad thing. But if you were Keir Starmer, would you call an election now? Absolutely not, I think. Reform may want one, but that's because they feel they'd surge ahead. But what we probably need right now, I think, is just a bit of stability. Now, as you can probably tell, I'm not really a gambler. And although I'm not averse to mixing things up every now and then, I don't really feel that now is the right time.
Right, okay, that's your lot this week. Thanks to Dan, Robert and Nikki for their contributions, and to our special guest this week, David Knight. Don't forget to keep an eye on Kent Online for the latest politics coverage, and you can also sign up to our politics briefing newsletter by visiting kentonline.co.uk/newsletters, and don't miss KMTV's politics show every Friday at 5 p.m. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Kent Politics Podcast. Don't forget to check out stories throughout the week on the politics page of Kent Online. And you can watch the Kent Politics Show on KMTV every Friday at 5 p.m. or on demand at kmtv.co.uk.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.